Janice, can you tell me first how you became part of the peace movement?
I think it was probably my family taking out a family CND membership in the early 80s. And that progressed on to me becoming friendly with the local CND group and going on demonstrations with them, including most notably my first act of direct action civil disobedience, entering the Wethersfield Air Base when I was 15. And then things just progressed from there.
So how did you first hear about Greenham Common? How did you get involved there?
I believe the first time I went was the Embrace the Base demonstration, and I went on a coach trip with my local CND group. So from then on, I think I went to the next one, and again, it snowballed.
And I believe you actually lived at the base, is that right?
I did, yes. When I was 17, I finally decided, I knew that I was going to end up living at Greenham, probably from the age of 15, but I wasn't old enough to do it. So finally, at the age of 17, I decided that the time was now to go. And I believe it was September time, 1986, I packed in my A-levels at college and I set off with a bag, a old-fashioned sleeping bag and £30 in my pocket to live at the peace camp.
What was it being at Greenham that made you stay?
I think I knew already what Greenham was going to be about because I'd visited before as a day visitor. But it was the particular camaraderie and just feeling like I'd come to where I wanted to be. And I just felt very happy and yeah, I just knew it was where I wanted to be.
Were you at a particular gate or particular gates while you were there?
I started off at Violet Gate, and then I think it was about November time, women were needed over at Orange Gate. So I then moved over to Orange Gate. But like most women during my time there, we would go to different gates as and when we were needed. So sometimes I'd be at Blue Gate. For example, when the convoy was out, Violet Gate would move to, I believe it was Woad Gate. So Yellow Gate sometimes, I don't think I ever stayed over. No, I did stay overnight at Yellow Gate. So, but yes, primarily it was Violet and then Orange. Mm-hmm.
Did you find your experience was different at different gates?
No, not really. Different people, but I found it to be No, I found it to be quite the same at each gate. There's been a big focus put on about different gates being for different things, like, I don't know, one they said was the New Age gate and one was the Music gate, and I didn't find that at all. I just found that, you know, every gate was a different environment, but it was the same thing, different place.
And was being at Greenham what you expected it when you set off as a 17-year-old then?
Yes. Yeah, it was completely what I expected. I knew what I was getting myself into.
How important do you think it was generally, but also was it important to you that Greenham was a strictly women-only space and campaign?
I think it was extremely important to the being of the camp. I think it was important for a lot of the women that were at the camp. I think I did place a lot of importance on being a women-only place because it was a place where we could feel safe as women only. And the support network was absolutely incredible. It always is when you've got a group of women together.
Yeah, very, very true. Do you think it would have been an entirely different form of activism if it hadn't been women only.
Possibly, but I do think still that the non-violent tactics would have been adhered to, and there possibly wouldn't have been some of the types of actions that we did and some of the creative actions that we did if it had been men as well. It's hard to know because it wasn't. So it's hard to know something that wasn't.
Mm-hmm. So about that wonderful creativity, how important was that, the use of art and of song? How important was that at Greenham?
Very, very, very important. The decorating of the fence, which everybody is aware of, the art, the singing, the music was definitely... I loved that part of it. It was the singing around the campfire some nights, and that's what you did that was our entertainment. That's what we did to have fun. And it was just lovely. It was really, really important.
Excellent. Tell me a little bit about how the camp was run, on a sort of day-to-day basis with regard to, say, cooking, general chores, sleeping.
Everybody did what they wanted to do when they wanted to do it, and everything seemed to get done most of the time. So, for example, if you were the first woman to get up, you would automatically make the fire and put the kettle on to make tea because somebody's got to do it and you're the first one up. So it would just be an automatic instinct, particularly if you want a cup of tea. Again, the washing up, it would be done. Someone would do it eventually, but I don't remember having any major fallouts, certainly that I was involved in, with regard to things not getting done. If a new ship pit needed digging, someone would go off and do it. Wooding. We were all aware of the things that needed doing, so we all knew that it made sense for someone to do it because collectively we weren't going to manage if nobody did it. So, we got on and we did it. Water needed collecting, it needed collecting, and we all suffered the consequence if it didn't happen, So, it was the knowledge that collectively it had to be done and you were a good as person as anybody to do it, eventually.
What do you remember about the living conditions there? I know some winters, the snow and the ice must have made it very hard.
I was there in January 1987. When we had snowdrifts at Orange Gate. And it was freezing, absolutely freezing. I do remember a space of, I don't recall how many days it was, but certainly a couple of days or possibly more, that I was stuck there with just one other woman. But we weren't accessible by anybody, so nobody could come and either remove us from there or bring us any food or anything else. So we actually ran out of water, wood and food. So we had to melt snow for our drinking water in the kettle. It's quite incredible how much snow you need to make a cup of tea. We had to go out wooding for the wood. We'd ran out of food at some point. I think we did have a box of Frosties left, which we ate.
Hardly going to sustain you through the winter.
No, luckily it wasn't for too long. And as soon as the conditions eased up, then women came from the other camps. I think we were all pretty much in the same dire straits at that point. I know, actually, I think the convoy was out at that time and it had some problems with the launchers freezing up and they actually were unable to return to the base as they would have done. Because the crew, the launchers worked on, and it was like an erector system to launch the missiles. And the, I don't know whether it was hydraulic fluid or, but which, whatever it was, got frozen, so they weren't functioning correctly. So yes, the conditions could be very, very harsh at times. Was very cold.
Was there ever a time during those harshest of conditions that you ever thought, like, giving up or going home?
No, I didn't. Because actually, in the times of the harshest conditions were the times where you needed to be there the most, because that's when, you know, perhaps people that were less able, women that were less able, wouldn't be able to be at the camp. So being a young woman at the time, no, I didn't think about going, and I couldn't at that point anyway.
Let's see. So tell me how about the way that decisions were made collectively. Was that effective, the way that decisions were taken like that? Was there ever any disagreement?
Oh, I think there were, yes. I think there were disagreements, but I tend to avoid conflict, to be honest. So I tended to back away from any conflict that was going on and was quite easygoing about, you know, how things were going to be happening. I know certainly at the money meetings there was often quite a lot of discussion, let's say, about things, but yes, I think from what I remember there was more debate and discussion than any sort of real falling out that I can remember as a general day-to-day thing. I mean, obviously, you know, sometimes people had had enough and and made their point, but no, I don't recall anything major going on.
It does seem that everyone's opinion was heard and respected.
Yes,
whatever the final decision.
Even the very youngest ones there, so even right down to, didn't matter the age or how long you'd been at the peace camp, you were still, everyone's opinion was valid. It was then working out. But we were all, we valued being individual women and making our own decisions anyway. So I'm thinking that possibly on a lot of things, maybe there wasn't a general consensus. There was no line that you had to toe, no rules that you had to follow. But obviously there was general consensus on some aspects, like the decision to damage property and whether that would be construed as an act of violence. Things like that were things that were debated, and there wasn't always agreement.
Would you say that women found green a means to claim some power back from, you know, the traditionally male-dominated bodies like the government and the military?
I think so, yes. Yes, definitely. Yes.
What do you remember about the relationship between the women and the men around you, the military, the police, the bailiffs?
I can only speak about my own relationship with them. I can't speak for any other women on anything. But there was times when the relationships were good between, say, the squaddies who were on the other side of the fence and the women on our side of the fence. And there were times when it was downright horrible. I never liked the bailiffs. I couldn't find any sort of a ground where I could find a level of tolerance for them, because I found them, I didn't know why they would do that job. And they were violent. At one point I lost everything to the bailiffs, including my shoes.
Your shoes? So
my shoes got taken. Everything I had got taken, including my shoes. I do believe they were actually, we managed to reclaim them again. So I think I got them back again. I was left standing in the mud in my socks. So, yes, I didn't have a good relationship with the bailiffs. The police, sometimes, again, there were certain modplods, military police, that we got on with quite reasonably. You got to know them, obviously, because they'd be standing there a lot of the time, so you would get to know them. And sometimes their actions were very violent, and and the military, it depended, really. I think it all depended very much on the individuals. You know, I think I retained the ability to be able to treat people as individuals there, rather than clumping everybody together. I didn't get on with the American servicemen. I found that a very difficult relationship. Don't like that bit at all. I don't like that. I'd like to revisit that question, probably, perhaps later on.
Yes, could absolutely. We do that? No yeah. problem at all. You want to think about that?
Yeah.
We can certainly revisit that question, or you can choose not to answer it. It's entirely up to you. So what was the relationship like between the women at Greenham and the local residents?
Oh, again, there was some people that were in support of us, and some people that actually actively came and offered us help and offered us a bed for the night if we needed it, and actively supported us. And of course, on the other side, there was organised groups that didn't like us, and the vigilantes, which used to come round, and they would try to make our lives as difficult as they possibly could. So their activities might range from throwing stones, driving past shouting at you. I've had a car that's basically gone off, it's has actually aimed itself towards me as I was walking along. I had someone got into the back of the van with me once when I was asleep in my Gore-Tex bivy bag, because I knew they were there and I'd heard them get in, but because I was zipped right up in there, they didn't see me. So luckily they just got out again, and it was quite unnerving.
That must have been very frightening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to wake up sometimes in the middle of the night and listen. And if I could hear anything rustling, I used to think to myself, is it a vigilante? Because they could be extremely violent. Luckily, I didn't actually get any physical violence against me. I'd forgotten. I did get jumped out by a man when I was walking along between Yellow Gate and Orange Gate, because I think the buses only went as far as Yellow Gate, and a lot of the taxis wouldn't take us. So I was trying to get back to Orange Gate, and it was dark, and a man waited in the woods for me as I was walking along, and ran out and grabbed hold of me and tried to drag me into the woods. And I can only assume that was a vigilante who knew that I was a woman from the camp. I did manage to get away from him, but I was trying to get people to stop and give me a lift back to the camp, but nobody would stop afterwards, so I had to walk the rest of the way in the dark.
That must have been a very frightening experience to be grabbed like that.
Very, yeah, very. Yes, it really was. So we used to as well, we would get porn left around the camps, underwear. I know some people had urine thrown at them, maggots. You name it, we got it.
It sounds to me, I don't know if you'd agree, that the actions of the vigilantes were, at least in part, motivated by misogyny.
Yes. Yes, I would say so. Well, it certainly seemed that way to me. How else would you interpret it?
Exactly. Moving on to a slightly different subject. Did any of the women that you knew at Greenham there have any conflicts with their partners or families because of their involvement that you were aware of?
Not that I was aware of. I'm not sure whether that's because I didn't delve, or whether I've forgotten. But not that I can recall. Mm-hmm. They must have done. They must have done.
Do you think Greenham was quite an important place for women to explore and express their sexuality and form relationships with other women?
Yes. Yes, I think that's quite well documented, that, you know, that was the case. But I don't know that it was all to do with sexuality. It was also to do with being with other women and exploring the bond of being with other women, which I found very, very important. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, it was definitely a place where I learnt a lot about being around women and what women can do.
I imagine for a lot of women there, whatever their age, it was probably the first time that they'd had this experience of being in a wholly women-only environment for such a long time.
Yeah, and I don't know that there are that many places even now that you get that experience. Yeah.
Do you remember there being children at the camp when you were there?
Yes, I do. I remember several children, whether they were there all of the time or part of the time, I don't remember, but I just do remember them being there.
Yeah. How were illnesses and injuries dealt with at the camp? What happened if somebody needed medical attention or they were ill?
Well, usually if you were ill, well, I know I was ill a couple of times, and I just sort of, it's not a lot you can do, really. Just had to put up with it. I know there was one time I was really, really feeling ill, but we didn't have any painkillers or anything like that, and it was raining, so I was just thoroughly miserable with it, really, really miserable. And another time that I woke up in the night, it was Halloween, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was violently, violently sick. And again, there's no comfort, so there was nothing that you could do. You couldn't go and, you know, warm yourself up a Wheatie and have a couple of ibuprofen. That just wasn't available. And injuries, again, well, if they were severe enough, then an ambulance was called or you'd go to casualty. But other than that, again, you just sort of, you dealt with it.
So I believe you were involved in quite a lot of the non-violent direct actions campaigns that that took place at Greenham. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I entered the base I don't know how many times, actually. I couldn't put a number on it. But of course, you weren't always arrested. When you went in, there were times, dependent on what was happening with the bylaws case, that you weren't arrested and you were just apprehended and chucked off the base. And I think other times they just decided not to arrest you. But no, I was involved really in breaking into the base and having a presence on the base. I remember the very first time, I believe we'd gone in to meet the convoy as it came into the base. But as it was, I was actually arrested quite quickly and charged. But because of the actions of Cruise Watch and Greenham Women on the way into the base, the convoy had been delayed. So I did manage to meet the convoy because it was so late getting back into the base that I'd been arrested and charged and thrown back out again. So I was still there to meet them. And then also at the other end, Salisbury Plain. There was, I think I only went onto the plane twice, as I recall, because obviously the convoy left Greenham. Most of the time it ended up on Salisbury Plain for the exercises. So at times Greenham Women would try to track the convoy with the CB radios, going down to the plane, working out which route it's taking and working out where it's going to, and try to locate the convoy on the plane. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the whole premise behind this was that the convoy was supposed to melt into the countryside, but there wasn't a single convoy that melted into the countryside, because every single convoy that went out was tracked. And yeah, so a couple of times I went down onto Salisbury Plain and managed to get right up to the barbed wire that was surrounding the convoy on the plane. I know the second time, I think we were walking for about 6 hours, because the convoy was on the move on the plane, doing its exercises. And so I think it moved from one copse or one situation to another. And I do recall it was on the move and we saw it and had to lay down so we didn't get seen, because what we wanted to do was confront it when it had actually stopped moving about, so we knew where it was located. And I remember laying there thinking, if it changes the direction it's going in, it's just going to run us over. So, and then inevitably on the plane, what would happen is you'd get up to the barbed wire, you'd make yourself very obvious that you were there, very vocal indeed, and then you would get arrested and driven off to the holding centre and obviously searched, arrested, charged and shot. Well, on Salisbury Plain, the first time you went on there, you got a warning off. So it was basically don't do it again. Obviously the second time you went, you got charged. Yes, but we did a range of actions collectively. Sometimes they were more fun. Sometimes we went in and did things that were quite amusing. I know one time I went in and after going to Hangar 303, we made our way to the main high street there, because we realised it was Valentine's Day and there was a dance going on, and tried to get into the Valentine's dance. But the Americans weren't keen on us going in.
How antisocial.
Yes. So unfortunately, instead, we were arrested.
How many times in total, if you can remember, were you arrested?
Arrested and charged. Mm. Four. Yeah, only four times.
And did you ever find yourself incarcerated?
Yes, I did, inevitably. I did end up, I went to Holloway Prison because my belief, and some women would have held this belief, others would have done it differently for me, but I did not want to pay the fine that had been imposed and chose to go to prison instead, which turned out to be quite a surprise when I ended up getting sent down, because I'd gone to court, been found guilty and fined and given 28 days to pay. And I'd assumed, based on what had happened to other women, that when I went back to court again, having not paid, I would be given a further 28 days to pay, but it didn't turn out to be the case. And I was sent down, which I wasn't expecting. And I think that just the feeling of being sent down, even though I knew I was going to go to prison, but not that day, was quite unnerving. And I should never forget the feeling of going down from the courtroom to the cells and thinking, ah, I've done it now. You know, this is now out of my control. Mm. It was quite a scary
of course,
feeling.
Yeah. How long were you in Holloway for?
I got a 7-day sentence and I think I served 5 days because I was let out for good behaviour.
And what was your experience like in there?
I felt that a lot of women were in Holloway because of poverty. Mm. And I got on. It changed from being really scared when I first got there, because I didn't know what to expect. Mm. And obviously you get there and you go through the strip search and you know, you just don't know what you're expecting. But once I was actually there, I didn't feel scared anymore at all. It wasn't pleasant, obviously. Well, it's just having your freedom taken away, isn't it? And I felt that I should refuse to do everything that I could refuse to do. So I refused anything I had an option in, like learning my prison number. Because I think when you lined up for your something, you had to give them your prison number. So I out and out refused to learn it. But no, my experience of prison was unpleasant. Unnerving, but I knew I was only there for a short time, so you know, I was fine. Fine with it.
And then went straight back to the camp.
Yes. Yep.
Would you have done anything differently?
Yes, I'd have done more. I'd have done more, and I'd have done it bigger, and I'd have done it better.
Brilliant. How do you think at the time Greenham women were portrayed by the media?
Oh, very badly. Mm-hmm. Very badly by most of the media. I mean, there was all sorts of stuff that was being bandied around about us, that we were on the payroll of the Russians, and that the Spetsnaz were training us, and the names that we were called, which I don't really want to repeat, we had terrible press. We were misrepresented and lied about, and anything they could do to discredit us, they tried to do. But what can you do?
Did you have any dealings with the media yourself?
No, I avoided the media like a plague. I did not want to be involved at all in that side of things. I could have done if I'd have wanted to. It's not that certain women were disbarred or certain women always spoke to the media. I had no interest at all in speaking to the media or getting photographed or any of that. I just sort of slunk away. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the camp was in any way politically infiltrated or sabotaged?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we knew at the time that we would have some form of infiltration by the government, the police, whatever you may think it would be. But obviously now, as time has shown, we were infiltrated by the Special Demonstration Squad. But yes, clearly we would have been infiltrated, because they wanted to know what we were doing, wanted to know what we were up to. And we presented a force that they wanted to get inside the brain of. They wanted to work out who the leaders were. Well, there were no leaders. There was nothing to work out. So, yes, absolutely think we were.
In terms of political activism, what do you think has been learned from Greenham? Do you think it's had an influence on subsequent political activism?
I like to think so, yes. I think we were quite before our time, really, in the actions that we were prepared to take. The camping out has become a feature, hasn't it, of some campaigns now, and non-violent direct action, where we thrashed out the whole decision on whether damage to property could be classified as violence or not. And obviously, as history shows us, we came out on the side of not. Yes, I think we did hopefully influence direct action today.
I'm sure. Why do you think it is, Janice, you might not have an opinion on this, but why do you think it is that the suffrage movement has been celebrated, whereas the peace movement really hasn't?
because I think people are still very divided on the peace movement. I think it's universally recognised now that women should have got the right to vote. Women should have the rights that we enjoy today. Mm-hmm. But I think on something like the peace movement, then obviously opinion is divided still on it. So I imagine that's why.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Once you'd left the peace camp, how did you find life outside and what did you miss particularly about it looking back?
I found it very difficult actually when I first left, yeah. And I spent a long, long time deciding whether I wanted to go back and live there again. I think I missed more than anything else. I was quite used to adrenaline by that point. But I think more than anything else, I missed the way of living. Being with other women, we were so close knit. It was when you're doing something like that with other people, you become very, very close knit. So I missed that, and I missed the being out in nature more than you could possibly mm-hmm. believe. There was just a certain feeling on a crisp winter's night when you're sitting out there and there's a bit of electricity in the air because you're planning an action. And it was that I missed, waking up and hearing the wind. And yeah, strangely enough, even though I cursed enough when it was freezing cold in the middle of the night, I really missed being outdoors.
If you don't mind me asking, what caused you to finally leave when you...
I left, it was really, I think, when there was an upset in the camp with the, when the peace camp split, what's always called the split of the peace camp, and there was a falling out between the Yellowgate women and the other peace camps, and I found the tension really, really difficult to deal with because I liked everybody and I didn't like the feeling of conflict. Plus, I'd been to Holloway and I think I was fed up of being scared a lot of the time. I think you get burnt out from it in the end because I wasn't one of these very bold, brave women who was very unafraid all the time. I was scared a lot of the time.
Well, it certainly sounds like you were very bold and brave.
I didn't feel it.
No, it really sounds like you were.
I suppose I just wanted to see what it was like to be, in inverted commas, normal. Give it a try.
And what effect do you think being at Greenham had then on your subsequent life?
Oh, it's I wouldn't be the person I am today without having been to Greenham. It taught me so much about myself, about women, about what we can do if we believe in something strongly enough. And I made friends there that I'll value for the rest of my life. It was the most incredible, incredible experience. And I feel very, very grateful that I was part of it.
Yeah.
Very, very lucky. You know, it was like the right time.
Is there one particular moment, an image or a memory of Greenham that particularly stands out for you?
I think it has to be, if I was a fly on the wall looking from the outside in, it would be sitting around the campfire of a night time, singing and playing the guitar and just having a lovely, lovely time doing that. And just being, even though we hadn't got the comforts or anything else, just being very, very happy doing that.
How would you describe your personal Greenham experience in just one word?
It would have to be two. It would be.
That's fine.
It would be fear and laughter.
That's brilliant. Fear and laughter. My final question. Could you explain why you think it's important that Greenham is remembered by subsequent generations?
Because I think it shows people, ordinary people, because we were just ordinary women, what you can do if you want to.
Mm.
It's, and it shows that actually when you do take action and when you're passionate about it, you can actually change things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we did. Yeah. So I think that's an important message to pass on.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you would like to talk about? Anything else you want us to know about Greenham and your time there?
I think the one thing that sometimes I think people don't realise
mm-hmm.
is that following the Greenham bylaws case, when it was basically declared that the Greenham bylaws were invalid, people who had convictions, women who had convictions for trespassing, criminal trespass on Greenham Common, effectively our convictions were quashed.
Mm.
But it just would have been nice to have had an apology.
Yeah.
For all of us that were sent to prison. And I don't think people realise that. I knew I was going to prison, and I went to prison because of what I believed in. But to know that there was no right to actually send me to prison.
Yes.
And then not even have so much as an apology over it it makes me a bit angry.
Yeah. Well, that is an important issue because, as it turns out, you were not trespassing.
No. No. Indeed, we weren't.
Can you tell me a bit more, Janice, about the relationship that the Greenham women had with the men around the base, the military, the police, the bailiffs?
Yes, at times it was fine. At times we would, talk with the squaddies, the MOD police, got to know some of them quite well, really, mm-hmm. a little bit about their lives. And, as individuals, some of them were perfectly nice to be dealing with. And, we were often chatting with them, and it was a good way to put our message across and to present ourselves as the way we wanted to be presented, as I thought anyway. But obviously then there was the flip side of that, where we had a terrible amount of violence from them. The bailiffs could be extremely violent at times and very much enjoyed using their authority in evictions. In evictions, which were often early in the morning while I was there, they would turn up. Hopefully you'd get a warning from somebody else that the bailiffs were on their way. And it was a bit of a cat and mouse game as to what they could grab before you could grab it. The important things being your shelter, your water, the food. And yes, it could become quite violent at times where they were trying to get things and angry if they didn't manage to do so. The police, when the convoy was entering or leaving the Greenham to go out on exercise, it was like a swarm of police descended upon you. There could be, I don't know, let's say 200 police. Would suddenly these vans would turn up, break to a halt, and they would just run out of the vans towards you, which is quite a terrifying sight. And by whatever means, you would be forced onto the side of the road so that they could flank the road. And that could often mean being put in arm locks, neck locks, being kicked, being punched, being dragged, being thrown. And again, the military, the US servicemen were certainly very aggressive towards us. So it was a mixed bag. It was dependent on the circumstances, dependent on what was actually going on, as well as who you were dealing with. Yes.
And what about the relationship of the women at Greenham with the local residents?
Again, a mixed bag. There were some that were very, very supportive of us, some that would offer beds for the night, baths, would come and actively support the camp, help with cruise watch. And then there were, of course, the vigilantes on the other side of things, who would do everything they could to make their lives difficult for us. And that would range from driving past, shouting abuse, throwing stones, leaving porn and underwear about the camp, throwing urine, maggots. And if they got the opportunity to actually cause physical harm and physically assault women. Mm-hmm. So they could be quite a worrying part of life at the camp.
Were the vigilantes mostly men?
I think so, yes. I got that impression, definitely. I always felt safest when there was a night watch on at the camp, because sometimes we had supporters that would come and stay up all night and sit and watch the base, often when we were possibly expecting a convoy to come out to watch for signs of the convoy leaving the base. And it just felt like that little extra layer of protection, that when someone was there and could alert you while you were asleep if something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think, both from the vigilantes and the bailiffs and what have you around the base, how much of their action do you think might have been motivated not just because they were doing a job but by misogyny?
I should think quite a proportion of it, quite obviously, from the things that we were called, from the things we were called and the way we were treated, like we were silly women. Should know better.
Well, I've come to the end of everything I want to ask you, Jan. Is there anything else you would like to tell us?
No. I think we've...
It's been absolutely brilliant, this interview. I've learned so much and I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.